For more information on Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please visit our website.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome. Our senior Dharma teacher, who is Taigen Dan Leighton, is on sabbatical for a little while. So Sangha members, we're kind of rotating to give some of the Dharma talks, and today is my day. So thank you, and I appreciate the opportunity to be able to do this. What I wanted to talk about today was the intimacy of practice. And in our Zen tradition, it's very common for us to kind of explain a teaching through a story and through an interaction of two different Zen practitioners that maybe lived a very, very, very long time ago. So I'm going to jump into that wonderful tradition and tell a story about the 42nd ancestor in this lineage. So our lineage is called Soto Zen in Japanese. In Chinese, it's Sao Dong. So the 42nd ancestor, when we say ancestor, it's a person who at some point was kind of the head Dharma teacher of the entire lineage. So this story is about the 42nd ancestor named Liangshan. And at the time of this story, he was not the ancestor or the head teacher yet. He was just a student. And when he was a student, his teacher's name was Tong An, and he was an assistant to Tong An. And then often, as an assistant, you would carry certain articles for your teacher, and you kind of would follow him around, him or her, and whatever they needed, you were there to kind of assist them. So on this day, and in this story, Liangshan was carrying Tong An's patched robe. And the patched robe is what you see some of us who are ordained priests wearing, which this is made from small pieces of fabric kind of put together. And then you also see people who are lay ordained, like David and Dylan and Kathy, who have smaller versions of that patched robe. So it just signifies the Buddha and the Dharma and the Buddha's teachings. So Liangshan was carrying Tong An's patched robe. And as they're doing this, Tong An, the teacher, asked Liangshan, the student, what is the business underneath the patched robe? So when he's asking what is the business, he means like, what are we doing? Like, why are we doing this? What's going on here with all these things that we do? Liangshan made no answer. He didn't know what to say. So Tong An said, the teacher said, studying the Buddha way and still not understanding, this is the most miserable. This is the most awful thing. Then he said, okay, Liangshan, now you ask me. So Liangshan said, Tong An, teacher, what is the business underneath this patched robe? And Tong An, the teacher, answered, intimacy. And at that point, Liangshan realized intimacy with his teacher. And that is to say that they were both, in that moment, greatly enlightened. This intimacy is the business of the Buddha mind that lives under the patched robe of our authentic ancestors. So there are a few things here. The intimacy, the Buddha mind, and the authentic ancestors. So intimacy takes on many forms in our life. And in this culture, when we use the word intimacy, most of us automatically think of very personal relationships. Maybe a romance or a marriage or a family relationship. And it's hard to equate that word with what we're doing here, with the Zen practice. And the Zen practice is an activity, a shared activity that has many forms. So one of the forms that it has is sitting in sitting meditation, which is called Zazen. That's considered one of the forms. Another form it has is the way we enter and exit the Zendo. Another form is how we bow to our cushion. Another form, for example, is When everyone walked in today, there was someone to greet them. Today, Jane was playing that role. And when you walk in, the greeter will put their hands in gassho and bow. When we do all-day retreats or all-day sittings, there's meal service. So there's someone serving the meal. There's someone cooking the meal. So all these different things give us an opportunity to interact in contemplative practice in a certain way with each other, and to also realize the Buddha mind while we're doing this. So the intimacy of this kind of practice is not usually acknowledged as a form of intimacy in our culture. And it doesn't only need to be the Zen practice. It basically could be any time a group of people come together and they kind of agree they're going to do something together. And they sort of agree, because we know it's hard for people to agree on things, right? But they sort of agree there's a way they're going to do that. So people doing theater could be one example. People playing sports can be another example of people coming together in a shared activity. And within that activity, there's a lot of interaction and a lot of relationships that happen. And there's a type of intimacy to that relationship that usually feels indicative of that particular activity. So this is something we also do with our Zen practice. Even though it could feel or look very solitary in some ways because we're not talking a lot to each other, there's actually quite a lot going on between all the members in the Sangha. The relationships within these forms are multiple. So for example, there could be the teacher-student relationship. There could be the knowledge we have of each other as we're sitting in Zazen, where sometimes it's amazing how much information you're taking in when you're actually facing the wall. There could be taking instruction and giving instruction of sutras or teachings, of rituals, of forms. All of those entail a certain kind of intimacy and interaction with each other. There's camaraderie within the Dharma relationships we have, friendships that develop. There's the intimacy there. And then there's also the challenges within those Dharma relationships, where even though there might be some friction, there's a type of intimacy also there. So we're really looking at all these small interactions that happen and the type of intimacy they avail to us. So for me, as I was trying to prepare this talk, and I'm thinking about the patched robe as well, in my mind, metaphorically, I'm like, okay, the patches on the robe kind of represent to me the different types of relationships we could have. All these different segments, but they're kind of under one roof in a sense. So, again, ancestors, teachers, a teacher teaches a student, then a student becomes a teacher, and so on and so forth. So I wanted to tell a story now of Tigan's teacher, whose name is Reb Anderson, who lives out in California. And one of the stories he tells about this intimacy and practice is something he experienced with Shunryu Suzuki. Shunryu Suzuki was the Japanese man who brought this Soto Zen lineage from Japan to the United States in 1959. So Reb Anderson went to California in, I believe, the late 60s to study with him. And so at this point of the story, he's already studying with him. And he's performing one of the rituals we do, which we didn't do today, which is chanting. But we did some of it, where I went up and offered incense, and we did a little bit of chanting. So as part of some of the rituals we'll perform in this Buddhist practice, there's an instrument that's sort of a wooden block. And the person who plays the wooden block in some of the situations would be sitting to the side of the altar facing in my direction. And then the teacher would go up to the bowing mat like I did when I offered incense and kind of go up there and make a number of offerings as this ritual is going on, as the wooden block is being hit. So the wooden block is being hit in a rhythmic fashion and the chanting is happening and the teacher is going up at specific points within it to make offerings of incense or the charcoal. So the story Reb tells is He's a young man, and he's sitting there playing the wooden block, and Shunryu Suzuki goes up to the bowing mat and starts performing the ritual. So Reb is looking at him and looking at him and looking at him, and Shunryu goes up there, and then he starts walking closer to where Reb is because he's over there. And then right when Shunryu Suzuki looks at Reb, he looks away right away. He's like, oh, he's looking at me, so he looks away, but he keeps playing the block. And then Suzuki Roshi makes the offering and comes back, and there's more chanting, and then he comes up again. And so Reb is looking at him, and then Shunryu looks at him, and then Reb looks away, but then he looks back at him, and then Shunryu looks at him again, and then they both meet eyes for a moment, and then it gets too intense, so Reb looks away. So you get the idea. And these small moments happen quite often in our practice, over and over and over again. So there's some kind of intimacy there. So I'm thinking, okay, what do I feel in my practice kind of felt the same way? So some of the things for me that feel very direct like that story is when I'm serving meals or when I'm being served the meals. Like for a moment, someone is literally putting soup in a bowl that you're offering somewhat ritualistically. And you're never sure, do I make eye contact? Do I not make eye contact? Am I getting enough? When do I make the signal that I've had enough? So it's a moment that maybe lasts not more than 3 to 5 seconds. But there's so much in that moment. There's almost a lifetime in that moment. And then thinking further on that, and this is why I was thinking about greeter. I think greeter for me is the most intimate. Because when all the different people come in, some you know, some you don't know, some you kind of known for a while, so you know their rhythm. You know how they're going to walk in. You know if they're going to want the bow right away. You're going to know if they want to put something down first. You know some people like to look you directly in the eye when they bow. Some might look and look away, so you don't want to be too direct with your gaze. Like all these different things happen within that. So in these moments, I have felt what I believe Reb was talking about in that intimacy. So if I use the metaphor again of the patched robe, then I was thinking, well, the threads are kind of like those little interactions that kind of piece together all these different type of relationships. But the story asks us to look at a deeper intimacy that is at play here. So I wanted to go then to the master who brought the Zen lineage from China to Japan in the 1300s, and his name is Dogen. So I wanted to look at maybe some of the things he said just about intimacy. So Dogen, when speaking of the intimacy practiced by the Buddha, said that the world-honored one, so he called him the world-honored one does not have form. He is free from ordinary ways of thinking. So right there, you know, we're talking about all these little things we do that kind of have a structure to them, and he says, well, the Buddha didn't have any of that. He goes beyond all of that. So when speaking of our authentic ancestors then, moving further kind of into that first story we told, Dogen said about that, our Buddha ancestors drop off body and mind. So he's pointing to the fact that Shakyamuni Buddha did not use form. And he's talking about the fact that our Buddha ancestors, who are all these great Dharma teachers that helped to carry the lineage through all the way to our present day, dropped off body and mind. So they didn't use body and mind, or they didn't necessarily experience Buddha mind using this body and mind. But they did, but they didn't. So there is a deeper intimacy here that is operating beyond form, but it actually does rely on the relationship of at least two people, because the story is about two people. So Dogen goes on to say, when you know yourself, you know intimate action. So again, when we know ourselves, our Zazen tells us to study the self. to look at our own relationship with our own self. So when you know yourself, you know intimate action. And if you know that, if you know that intimate action, thus Buddha ancestors can thoroughly actualize this intimate heart. You should know that where there are Buddha ancestors, this intimate action is immediately manifest. So you know yourself. If you know yourself, you can enact this intimacy. If you can enact this intimacy with yourself, you can enact it with other people. If you're enacting it with other people, the Buddha ancestors are present. All of them. Not only just those two people, in that moment. So you have to ask, are there moments in these interactions where there is no form and when we can realize self and other along with all the ancestors who practice the same similar moments with each other? In the first story, the question is important because when the teacher asks Liangshang, the student, to ask the question, the story begins there. But remember, the teacher said, okay, now you ask me the question. So it wasn't just about giving Liangshang the answer about the business under the patched robe. It was necessary for Liangshang to also ask him the question. So I realized, too, looking at this, that, and Taigen is big on this, always asking questions, never looking for concrete answers. And anytime you feel you have an answer, open up to a question again. So there must be something in the asking that happens with our heart that allows us maybe to open up, to receive what's given when we ask the question. And maybe in that moment, there's something beyond form. Dogen goes on to say that intimate means close and inseparable. There is no gap. Intimacy traces the Buddha ancestors. It embraces you. It embraces self. It embraces generations. It embraces merit. It embraces intimacy. Dogen says that we should clearly study this. And I think that's where I'm going to end and then open the floor for any comments, suggestions, or questions. Intimacy. Yeah, just the one word answer. You're welcome. Thank you, Hogetsu. And there's a lot of intimacy that is shared when we're sewing as well. And Hogetsu is our sewing teacher. So that was one of the other, there's so many aspects to practice, but there's just amazing intimacy in that as well. Not only with the people you're sewing with, but as you said, the intimacy with yourself as you're doing each stitch. So it's nice. Excellent.
Like the fabric tabs. If anybody saw anything, you'll notice like the thread, which sutra is part thread in Sanskrit, has its own kinetic energy. But I think that's true, you know, Laurel is a naturalist, the natural world, with the ropes we wear, the jeans we wear. So there's something very deep in this, you know, what's underneath all this world business.
Something that's been going on a lot recently in the city. And I'm thinking about when I was selling the rocks, so I remember just having that relationship with the thread. What was coming up for me a lot is getting myself out of the way. That when I can just focus on whatever it is, whether it's seeing the patient's eyes, just having that moment where all of a sudden there's no separation. That's where it is. My need to take my agenda out of the picture and just to be there with something. I know I've had doing hospice work with some people were just like, and come away just completely, you know, so intimate with them. Because I was able to just take my own stuff out of the way and just to be there. And I think that's really important. I remember so much some of the rockets and the few who gets it, and it's just like so intimate. It really was.
That's for sure.
I used the word intimacy in a Zen context maybe a month or two ago with someone who had a really negative reaction because to that person it really connoted sexual intimacy. And since then, and they felt like, you know, let's keep these two things separate. And since then I've thought about how we can really strip our most intimate relationships of that intimacy by lots of different things. Our culture, I think, encourages us to have expectations about how relationships should go. And we can really miss, you know, the whole person that we're interacting with if we are too focused on this should be happening. And we can really miss ourselves if we try to fit ourselves into a mold of how something should be. Even though, you know, in all relationships there are maybe roles that we take on, mm-hmm. like student and teacher, or husband and wife, or you know, parent and child, and so there's a lot to be maybe gained by just looking at our expectations for those interactions and those relationships and what they should be like, what we think they should be like. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've given this some thought as well, because here's a classic, right? If two people in a relationship start having a problem, inevitably you hear the line at some point, I really thought I knew that person, and I didn't know them at all. And you could have, you know, been with them 2 years, you could have lived with them for 10 years, but usually that sentence comes out at some point, and then you start questioning if you ever really did know them that well, right? So I'm thinking, when we look at intimacy in this context and applying it to other more personal relationships, and then our practice tells us that there's impermanence and nobody is a fixed point in time. So whatever person we're interacting with is going to change throughout time. They're not going to be the same person. And of course, you're not the same person. So what do you get intimate with? And in some ways, when I think about people that I've had relationships with, you know, you always bring up things like, yeah, they had the weirdest way of eating their cereal. they would almost put the bowline on the left side and then they would move it to the right and they'd smack so loud with just a certain kind of cereal. So, you know, it's like, right? It's all these smaller moments that when you look back at the relationship and even you kind of forget a lot of the bad things, you talk about those small moments because somehow we know in those small moments is where that intimacy really happened. And the talking and the changing of perspective and emotions are some of the things that are constantly in flux all the time. So it didn't mean that you didn't know that person at all, because you actually did know them. But both parties changed, you know. But anyway, so I agree, like a lot of times we have expectations. Dave, this is also what you were saying, you have an agenda you bring to relationships, and the minute you have that, you're limiting the possibilities within that experience. Hence, constantly ask questions, you know.
It can, just to follow up, it can seem very odd to maybe people who are coming here for the first time that we sit here in silence and we show up in silence, and you know, maybe the first time you come, you get some instruction, but a lot of times there's not a lot of talking. And over maybe the course of a retreat, it's amazing how well we can come to know each other, even without talking, just by kind of getting a feel for each person and observing those details.
What is the relationship between establishing intimacy and setting appropriate boundaries? I'm trying to understand, because I mean, am I right in thinking setting appropriate boundaries is part of how we succeed in functioning in our communicating and interacting? What's the relationship there? I just don't know. I'm very attracted to, the idea of intimacy is just a beautiful idea to me. On the other hand, I don't know. Am I thinking of two different things or the same thing?
And I'll give you an answer. And I asked a question similar to this, but within a different context, when I did the intensive with Reb. And I'll tell you what, because basically, this is what I'm hearing, okay? The question is, between self and non-self, you know, sometimes non-self is the greater universal that we experience, and self is our individual identity. I mean, we have an individual identity. And his answer, and so you don't want to lean into one or the other too much, because if you completely inhabit non-self, there is no longer a practice, and you lean into nihilism. But if you completely inhabit self, then you're not open to possibilities, because you have a concrete agenda and expectation of everything. So Reb said our practice is actually on the threshold between those two. That is exactly where our practice is. And I think it, and it's kind of because Gyoshin does Tai Chi also, and it's the yin-yang symbol. Everyone's kind of familiar with that black and white Chinese symbol with changing dynamics. It's kind of like that. We're in the sphere of activity, and the movement between self and non-self is constantly changing. But it's that middle point where the practice is and how we negotiate that. So, but I don't know.
This negotiated place. Mm-hmm. So, and there's that constant kind of uncertainty about that. That happens like when we're serving more yogi or hoping, you know, walking in the zendo together or just living our lives. How do we approach the cashier and the checkout counter? But like with Reb, I was thinking I wondered if Suzuki, when he was playing the Bakugyo, I was wondering if Suzuki Roshi was looking at him going, thinking, I think he should slow that Bakugyo.
Right.
And if you've ever been a Doan, you may have had that happen, actually, where somebody's like looking at you, or like you're doing service, and like either there's something going on with the Doan, the Doan's like, oh, well, don't get up at that timer. Get going, you know, move faster. So there's, but you know, it's interesting with Rev, I've often experienced this thing, and you know, this is something I like to practice actually too, but often roaming around a practice place like where Rev and crew live, when you're wandering around, you might run into Rev. Let's say you're carrying something, and in a monastic situation or in a temple ground, usually you do gassho to people. You know, you bring your palms together. And, you know, I often notice that, like, Rev will be carrying something, and he'll look at you, and then he'll put down what he has carefully someplace, and then gassho. But there's something about that kind of, you know, and like I'm like, if I'm not carrying something, I'm like, I'm already in gassho before he's set his thing down, mm-hmm. you know, or I don't put my stuff down fast enough, you know, so like there's this kind of, but I find a great teaching in that, how do we meet, and that there's space around that, you know. So like Suzuki Roshi might have been like, grab, get going on, or, you know. This guy is a little shy right now. He doesn't, he's not, he can't stand the intimacy yet.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so there's something about practice where we can slow it down to stand, like when we're stuck here on our cushions, I think we can stand the intimacy. You know? So you don't have to look into it.
Right.
Or notice that something moves. So, you know. But there's something very powerful in that moment, too. And every day.
No, he moved on to something else. That's one thing I always did like about the Zazen, though, is, you know, and again, it just depends on each different person. But for example, that you can sit in Zazen in a community like this, and no matter what's going on with you, and sometimes it's difficult, you know, and things come up, and you make it very emotional. And no one's going to be like, hey, you know, stop crying, or why are you crying? You could just really experience it in that silence, and it's okay. And you feel supported at the same time because of the people here doing this with you. And everyone, and you know people understand. They don't have to tell you they understand, you just know they understand. So there's a deep intimacy in that as well, and a lot of support. Can we have a time check?
10:55.
Okay. We probably should stop discussion at this point.